Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock UK time in London, and it's also 5 o'clock on the island of Guernsey, where I welcome this week's guest, Mark Wynn. Mark and I had met a little while ago. We are both proponents of having coffee with people, which these days means it's on Zoom. We're both in our relaxed, casual civvies. Today, for me, I'm self-isolating with all the COVID cases because in 2 days' time, I'm going in for elective surgery, which theoretically means I chose to do it because of the beauties of the bowel cancer screening process in the UK. I'm one of the large number, but the minority who gets screened who turned up an early stage colon cancer tumor. So I'm going to get surgery, so I'll be off the grid for a few weeks. There won't be one of these podcasts for a few weeks, but I anticipate being back online in 2 or 3 weeks. So it's one of those things. You say that word beginning with the third letter of the alphabet and people tend to freak out. But I feel very lucky and grateful for the universal healthcare system in the UK, of the NHS. So that's why I'm also sitting in casual clothes. Glad to be chatting with Mark after our random coffee. We're both island boys. I'm from Cayman, he's from Guernsey, and we're sure there's a lot in common. But Mark may choose to explain why he's in his civvies. And then let's have roughly half an hour of hearing some thoughts from Mr. Wynn. How are you, Mark?
I'm kind of good. I suppose there's three C words relative to this conversation. One you mentioned, two is the other C word, which I have at the moment, which is COVID, which I think has been the big, the emergent C word of our times.
Yes.
But the third C word is obviously coffee, which is something that we share. But I mean, it just shows how wonderful the world is right now with this kind of opportunity, this technology, as we're having this conversation, yet we're being both isolated for
different reasons.
Tell
our audience a little bit about yourself. What you're up to, what you've been up to, what's on your mind now beyond getting out of isolation in a few days' time.
Yeah, what's on my mind? Liberation from this place. And I would like to say I wear civvies all the time. I don't actually own a suit. It's a form of kind of protest, playful protest. I live in a small island state. I grew up in a wealthy family, but I also spent a lot of time in Africa. I grew up questioning success, I think, when I spent time seeing very happy people with nothing, and then also spent time with people with lots and not necessarily very happy. And so, the narrative of get a good education and make a lot of money. My dad also left school at 14 and made a lot of money, had no education. So I grew up quite conflicted with some of the narratives. So I really grew up questioning. But I was born in this island tax haven for all kind of my sins. But I saw a lot of the world growing up. Built a business in my 20s, but kind of had two nervous breakdowns during that process. So kind of recreated some of the model. And then started mentoring entrepreneurs in 2008 after we sold the company. And really was focused on supporting entrepreneurs to build lives where they could thrive rather than, typically an entrepreneur can often become a slave to the business rather than something. And so I became really interested in how do you build systems and organizations for human thriving. And then a few years, I ended up at a place called Singularity University, which is the university of kind of extreme technology. And then I started to see solving global problems with technology, and I started to see a few things. One is that we had all this technology coming and that was going to create a lot of chaos. And, they talked about viruses emerging in this timing. They talked about kind of problems like Trumpism and algorithmic manipulation at scale. And I started to see the role that islands could play in the transition. But one of the challenges with islands is, as we've had this conversation, is that they're quite conservative. There's a lot of social risks. And so you look, so to kind of start to leverage a collective capacity, one has to move forward. One has to understand that things move at the speed of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I've become fascinated over the past 7 or 8 years, maybe 10 years, in terms of decoding trust, decoding belonging, and fostering innovation with the scaling of deep relationships. And doing a lot of that within small island states, primarily because you can coffee with the president, coffee with the homeless person, you can coffee with everybody around a whole system. And so you can start to see and feel how relationships can transform governance itself. Yeah, that's hopefully a meandering thing. I don't know if that made sense. But
well, yes. Yeah, I mean, so with all of the VUCA world we live in, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, and that's become more and more apparent in about from about a decade ago, there are certain advantages in small island states. And I go back to Cayman when we had a massive hurricane in 2004. We could literally, everybody was no more than, forget 6 degrees of separation, everybody was no more than 1 degree of separation. And what that meant was you knew each other. Sometimes you weren't that aligned or you had different interests politically, business or whatever. But when a crisis hit, we pulled together all the people who needed to be in the room for different things. All the differences went out the window and all the trust that was there, meaning we all had the interests of the country at heart. And we got the island back up and running far faster than the bigger country could have done.
Yes.
So at time of crisis, all of those, all the barriers of human behavior just fell away and everybody just responded very well. And I believe from talking to you before that something quite similar happened in Guernsey and Cayman in the initial suppression of COVID is that they just went, right, okay, what do we need to do? And those islands are very, very good at adapting and well, reacting actually. And it's an interesting conundrum, that sometimes though the conservative nature of small communities, means that change, particularly in relatively wealthy islands such as Guernsey or Cayman, can be difficult. So you have to build trust and build connection. So you did something about that in Guernsey starting a number of years ago. So tell us a little bit about what you did.
Yeah, we originally set up something called the Dandelion Project, which was just a narrative more than anything, you know, which is how do we make Guernsey the best place to live on Earth by 2020? And underneath that, we built things like TEDx conferences and other kind of spin-offs from TEDx. And then we also had an extraordinary amount of coffee, you know, looking for who these conferences surfaced, who are inspired and finding and unearthing change makers within the system. But I mean, essentially all we really did was there are kind of the downside of innovation, which we talked about, which is how emergency and chaos and war drives innovation. But what we're really trying to use is a mechanism of hope, like the Apollo program, you know, where you could use a positive, hopeful narrative and see if you can use it to drive innovation. That doesn't involve emergency war yes. and collapse. But I mean, I think what, and then I suppose, I mean, I don't really have the answers to whether what we did worked or not. Cause you know, Guernsey did extraordinarily well during COVID, as did many islands. But what's interesting is we have a large capacity of social change makers, people interested in community, a very strong community that's built here. Some of that's natural because it's a small island state, and some of that has been fostered, cultivated. And so there's a social capital capacity here that exploded into life when the emergency came. Now, the question is, you know, Guernsey looks like it's performing much better than neighboring islands economically. And socially, but it's hard to say whether a social capital building process that you can't really measure directly influenced. But I've been fascinated and spent most of my time just joining dots, finding out what people's deep purpose is, and going through the process of continually doing that, and doing it within a confined space of 63,000 people and 25 square miles. But yeah, I was liking it to, you know, putting a candle on. If you try and do this work in a big country, it's like sticking your candle under a bathtub. You know, the water's never going to boil. But what you can do with small islands is take that candle into the small saucepan that is an island, and then just hold it there and see if it can come to boil. And so, I really think that small island states are going, with very cohesive, very inspired and ambitious populations, are going to be the centers of the next renaissance. And we need to go through a renaissance, because we basically cannot continue in the way we currently organize, because we just don't have the planetary capacity for it. And so something is likely to emerge. A new form of governance is likely to emerge, whether we like it or not. My thesis has always been that can be built in the island. I think governance is going to happen at a smaller scale, as technology enables small groups of people to do more and more. And, the thesis behind our work was always around how can we support and facilitate the speeding up of that process by getting underneath some of these fear of change dynamics within island populations.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I'm joining the dots to our prior conversation and adding something, just connecting the dots. So in the late 90s in Cayman, they had a sort of national conversation, which they called Vision 2008. So they were looking about 10 years out, and they were looking at what would the country look like, etc. And it was a huge amount of engagement. It was very successful at that level. It was, divided into certain categories, but effectively it was a visioning and strategic planning exercise that got into detail in a lot of areas. And as often happens in these situations, whether led in the public sector, community-wide, or in corporations, a lot of it doesn't happen. Interesting what you talked to me about. There was some very good initiatives came out of it. A lot of social capital was built. People got to know each other, but they tended to operate in the areas they were familiar with. So experts were put with experts in certain areas. So one of the abilities in a small island of having kind of grown up in Cayman is that you'd bump into people at the hardware store or the supermarket or the school playground or different places. You can never go, when people used to visit from big countries and come to see me on business, they would be always a bit thrown by the fact I couldn't walk anywhere without somebody knowing me. And it's the same for everybody around here. We kind of all know each other. But it was defined from the beginning. And one of the things you talked to me about, so linking to your idea of let's make Guernsey the best place to live in the world by such and such. So a sort of NASA moonshot mission. One of the things she talked to me about was the idea of having these many, many coffees and events, etc., and having somebody be a benefactor or multiple people raise funds for it, but having no particular goal in mind from the conversations other than to create connections. And I thought that was absolutely fascinating, because you've got a higher level context of let's put this out there in the Dandelion Project of make Guernsey the best place in the world to live by 2020. And let's just all start talking about like have that out there and have conversations. So a lot broader. And my last thought for now would be, I very much agree with small island states being able to lead at this time of need for change. But I'm also Scot. I'm a dual national, and Scotland is a country of 5 million people, faces very similar opportunities and challenges. They chose not to vote for independence in 2014, and part of that was because a campaign literally called Project Fear and led by the British Prime Minister was saying, oh yeah, but you could, this could happen to you, so they knocked the bravery out of the system. But on the other hand, the government there about 15 years ago said, we're going to produce X percentage of our power from renewables within, I think it was 15 years. And as a national development, they got it done, way early. And you can literally drive across the border from England to Scotland and see all of the huge amount of wind turbines that are up there that, and generate the renewable power. So once you get people together and create like cohesion and belief, you can get through the lack of trust in the system, lack of bravery. So I just thought it was, all of that was interesting. So perhaps just take us a bit through the what actually happened when you got going with the Dandelion project. And because it's
yeah, I mean, I think
tangible,
I mean,
but there's also method to it, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it felt fairly shooting from the hip at the time, but I mean, ultimately, I suppose you don't really know what you know when you go about doing things. So part of it was, but yeah, I mean, that thing you talked about, Project Fear, is a good example. Like, isolated people and lonely people and disconnected people are easier to manipulate around fear. I mean, ultimately, if you look at like a group of chimpanzees or a group of bonobos, they huddle together and release oxytocin whenever they feel scared or cortisol. And so, you know, what I see is communities get braver when they're more socially connected. That's a hormone thing. And so people, you know, communities that are in high connection that can cope with higher levels of fear when things get chaotic. And so if you just, and yet we're kind of really designed to be socially isolated. So we're isolating both of us right now in our, in our housing units. We're not living as a hunter-gatherer tribe anymore. We're not living as a village anymore. And so our capacity to use the biological processes that we're designed to, which is one of connection and touch, and deep trust that comes with living in, you know, separated together in a village.
Yeah, yeah.
We've moved beyond some of these processes. And so for me, it's around how do we have village scale organizing and village scale relationships as we're designed to do, so we can actually process what we experience properly. And so, yeah, when you see this in algorithmic manipulation, like Project Fear in Scotland, that gets to derail projects and processes, to me, I've always seen that as a symptom of a breakdown in the social fabric that then can be manipulated by those that wish to peddle fear. And as community gets stronger, as relationships get deeper, as people's deep whys surface with each other, then it's much harder to manipulate that. It's like, you know, it's a way of, like, strong relationships, and strong relationships are about really connecting to people's deep whys and who they are, the essence of a person is. And scaling those strong relationships around community has an inoculating effect on system scale fear.
That's, I mean,
to me, it's a I see it as a vaccine, right? You know, of dealing with the fear of change is understanding that it's isolation and separation that drives that. So you're having to process cortisol in your head going into this isolated monkey zone, whereas when you're in community together, you're processing it through
oxytocin. You get comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being really
but I think the power
arbitrarily simple simplistic, because I'm sure it's much more complex than that, but
it makes sense. If I try to combine, like, so if we think about that physical closeness and physical isolation, it's, you know, cortisol is the stress hormone. So that means you will be more fearful and more isolated, and you don't join the dots, and there's that loss of social capital. So you become fearful. Whereas the more connected people are, use the parallel of bonobo monkeys being very, very physically close together and releasing the cuddle hormone, oxytocin. Then that's if one's an inoculation against fear, it's all the other way of languaging that is an injection of bravery. And one of the things I'm kind of known for is talking to people, whether it be in Cayman or Scotland or other small island states, about the power of small islands and that they and smaller nations, and that they can, if they, what would you do if you were brave, right? What changes would you make? And I think that the last piece, just to connect your dots a little, is as somebody who worked a lot in the last decade as a coach, I've developed lots of little aphorisms, and one of them is, when you get clear on the why, the how becomes easy. Mm-hmm. And whether it's an organizational why or a national why, but it is a deep connection to really understand what makes somebody tick. Beyond making money, beyond identity and reputation, what really makes them tick? And I think to a few hours ago, I had a mentoring call with a young entrepreneur in New York who's looking to launch an app, right? And in and of itself, to be honest, that could bore me. But when he talked about his why, for what drove this young person to work with an older demographic to help them with something, it's just like, that's the bit I'm going to remember from that 1 hour conversation.
Yeah.
That's the thing that builds the connection. So it's absolutely fascinating. So you did a, I'm aware there's an audience that, there's a number of people from Scotland, a number of people from Cayman and Barbados and Bermuda and stuff who listen to this. If you were going to teleport into, well, these days you can actually fly. We're further down the pandemic. So, once you're no longer.
I haven't left yet.
No, true.
To get on a plane last week, but got COVID. That was my first attempt to leave.
Darn it. Soon come, as we'd say in Cayman. So if you were to go to talk to people in places like Cayman, Bermuda, Barbados, Scotland, Isle of Man, wherever, and if you were to be over there, who would you be talking to, and what advice would you give them from your and you're being downplaying it a bit. You have had some success. You and the people involved had some success in Guernsey. Who would you talk to, and what would you say?
Well, I always see the system change as a giant Jenga tower. And rule number one is, I only go for loose bricks, and so
right.
It really is. My diary has always been open, and anybody from any of those places, feel free to just use it. And it's like, who wants to have a chat, right? And really, it is.
I hope people are listening. If you feel like you want to talk to Mark, you're already self-selecting as a loser.
Exactly. Right, just follow the urge.
Book a coffee with him. He's well into it.
And I think in the early stages of me doing the work, what we didn't really realize is there were a load of people out there in community that are just waiting for permission they didn't need to get to do things.
Right.
So that's really like the first process. Understand that in every island community, because everybody's wearing a mask, because the cost of social rejection is so high in small communities, that people hold these things within inside themselves and don't let it out for fear of social rejection. And only when they start to have safe conversations with people who feel safe, do these things start coming out. And then in those conversations, you can start to go, you don't need permission, but I'll give it to you anyway. And you say, have you thought about speaking to this other person who's also interested? And really, it's about finding, investing in the connectors the safe spaces, the connectors that can start to facilitate all of these deep whys, all of these ideas, all of this capital and connections and stuff within the process, and understanding that this social awkwardness and the social fear that exists within all these systems is the primary barrier to a system's development.
Mm-hmm.
And we all do it. We all wear professional masks. You talked about us being in, not being in professional clothes today.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't do it, but it's a deliberate thing that I don't do it, because I see it as mask wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, we're all projecting this Instagram life or anything like that, but at home it's an absolute cluster, and it's only when we can start to find leaders in the community who can show up as their whole selves and give other people to be permission and cultivate that gradual practice of realizing that if you can learn to be who you are and give other people permission to be who you are, and you can follow your passion, follow the thing that burns inside you, and start to cultivate through a group process of stepping through that fear of sharing these things that are inside, these whys and things like that, that feel terrifying when you're isolated and alone and wearing a mask. And if you can start to change culture, person by person, to get them to just take the mask off a little bit, share a bit more about what makes them take, or even ask themselves the question, start to share those ideas and understand that new ideas, there'll always be people that viscerally reject them straight away. That's normal. And that isn't that you've been rejected, that's just them, you know, and so some small skills about dealing with initial rejection and finding your tribe around an idea and it being okay and not necessarily scuttling straight back into your shell after the, and learning a more playful, less, you know, playful way of doing it. So, I mean, I feel like I'm peddling something that's really, really breathtakingly simple, because it isn't about
the
big top down stuff. It is about the day to day weaving of the mycelium of and you know, I'm someone, if you can, you'd say, oh, Mark, come and hang out in Cayman for 2 or 3 years. I think someone from Dominica asked me this, and then I said, wanted me to work in an office. I said, if you think I'm going to work in an office, you're missing how this works. You know, if you say, Mark, come and start the process, it'd be, I'll bring my coffee cup and I'll just start hanging out with people in this community. And then, and it's like mining, right? You know, there's all of this gold that exists.
So
it beneath the surface that just needs, gently panning and bringing out. And it exists everywhere. In every community in the world, they have far more assets than people around. And all of our systems are designed for deficits. And within all of these communities around the world and in organizations, there are all of these assets that go untapped and unused. And it's only through trust and strong relationships that these things start to emerge.
That last piece is you know, the simplicity is you can be the permission granter. You can go, you don't need me, but I'm giving you permission. Whatever it is you want to be, that you know, doesn't say you should be, you've got permission, all right? I'll come to the deficit bit. There's a little joke the other day around, which is very relevant to Cayman, because Cayman's gone in just a couple of generations. The level of wealth is incredible. And there is a cultural thing now that you want people to wear not suit. People don't wear suits, but formal clothing, etc., and go to work in an office. And it's like from one of the well-known Indian heritage actor in the UK called Sanjeev Bhaskar was, you know, somebody was recounting this story from him. And he said he was finishing school and his dad said, what do you want to do when you leave school? He says, I want to be an actor. He said, son, it's pronounced doctor. So if you don't want to be an accountant or a lawyer in the Cayman Islands, then you don't score as many social points with your parents and family and friends, right? But you have permission to be whoever you want to be. And that comes back to the deficit mindset. I'm a big fan of focusing on strengths orientation. And I am absolutely convinced, after living most of my adult life, vast majority of it in the Cayman Islands, that small island state has a stunning amount of strengths and abilities in all kinds of ways, which need to be unwrapped from the different deficit mindset and fears that, to be honest, the British Empire has put several hundred years of colonialism into. So
you can look at this particular challenge our Institute of Directors conference here was just about basically having the same discussion as we lose our young people. There's a, you know, age 20 to 30, they disappear off to uni. A lot of them don't come back. And it's like, well, ultimately, a lot of young people, they're interested in, you know, being in flexible environments, and they're interested in purpose-led businesses, and they're interested in a much lower cost of living, so they don't have to work as hard. And the point is, you know, on the other side of the coin, you've got this big aging population issue where we, you know, need to find a way to pay for the cost of that. And, you know, we're starting to realize that, like, you have to build industries of purpose to keep a generation of people who want to be more purposeful and want to be more flexible. And so, you know, fundamentally, the organizations that are more dressed down and more purposeful here are attracting the best talent, right? And so it's a self
fulfilling. Once you get going, and for me, I had this diagnosis a few weeks ago. I was going to be spending a month in Cayman for most of April and early May, and I would have probably had 100 coffees for people, right? It's funny. I think one thing I'm learning from you is to always be aware of when I'm outcome oriented, and when not to be. And sometimes just showing up as somebody who, being as objective as I can about self, is I do live my purpose, and I did let go of the conventional, to a large extent, the conventional sense of what I should do and what, you know, what I, you know, achievement oriented. But I am still historically a business person who looks to achieve goals. So I go, well, okay, if I came in, it could be a green economy and all this kind of thing. But I think that's the behavior shift and the building of the trust and the social capital is the bit I was absolutely fascinated in talking to you before and listening to you today. Because for the small island state closest to my heart, and I think it'd be very common with many other small island states and smaller nations, is it begins with having the conversation about what's our why individually, collectively, what are we brilliant at? And then that goes, maybe go full circle, maybe we can wrap up with this. I literally pulled up an old Facebook memory back from the days when I used Facebook, but I still check it, the memories most days, because there's pictures of my kids from when they were younger.
Nice.
And about, when would it have been? About 12, 13 years ago, I first saw a certain four circle Venn diagram.
I think I wrote the blog post in 2013 or 2012, I don't know.
Maybe wrap up with that, because it does link into what you've just spoken about.
Yeah, I mean, so kind of one of the things probably the thing I made the most impact is not in kind of island changing, it is around a blog post I wrote, which had a diagram, a Venn diagram on it that spread around the world and been seen by hundreds of millions of people and had books written about it, and it's the concept of Ikigai. Mm. But I'd really merged to, and I first heard about Ikigai through Dan Bretner's work on how to live to 100 plus in the blue zones, and I was interested in Guernsey becoming a blue zone. But there was also this purpose diagram, Venn diagram I'd seen in kind of some corner of a book somewhere that wasn't really that well known, but I resonated with it. And all I really did was write a blog post that changed purpose to Ikigai on this diagram. And then I just, as I did, I wrote weekly at the time, and I just left it and thought nothing of it. And then someone picked up the diagram and shared it, and then it went exponential. And you know, and so this Western version of the concept of Ikigai, which is really purpose, has, you know, and it changes thousands of people's lives. Just, you know, it's one of those diagrams that that people can see it and their life changes. And there's lots of stories of this, and I feel like it was like 45 minutes of my life, and
yeah.
And I didn't really think about it too much at the time, and it turned into a worldwide meme. But it also speaks to something, I think, that, you know, it's a meme that unlocks people's why. And
well, just pause for a moment and just recap, where this is vast majority of the audience are audio, but there's four circles when you find your overlap. And what are the four circles?
You know, what you're good at. I mean, I don't even, I can always struggle to what you can be paid for, what's needed. And I forget the
one. Yeah, well, it's the bit that goes back to what we talked about. It's like we tend to think about what are you good at and what can you paid for in choosing the work you do, whether
and
it's
what you love. Yeah.
So it's what does the world need and what do you love? And actually, the idea, the simple idea of what do you love, being injected into your choices, it's quite revolutionary, at least from when I was growing up.
And I think about it in terms of island scale as well. I said, you know, I remember saying, one of our speakers here as well said it, I've said it as well, if you create a lot of jobs that people don't love and you raise cost of living off the back of it, you create a whole load of systemic issues, mental health issues, chronic disease issues, inequality issues. And so really it's about understanding the Venn diagram, not only from an individual perspective, but organizationally. And so what is an organization's Ikigai, or nationally, in terms of what is a community's role in the world? And I think it's a diagram that can help people put their story within context. And I haven't seen anyone do a national strategy.
That's just hit me like
But I have seen organizations create
well, that's just hit me. The Cayman Islands needs to change its conversation with the world, because the world reads, you know, sound bites and thinks tax haven, and there's so much more to it.
Yeah.
But if you think about the what could Cayman be good at, what does the world need from that island, right? What does it love, right? And what can it be paid for? Kind of, I have a model that looks at purpose, people, and planet, and profit is subordinate to all of that. But if you get the allocate the focus on purpose, people, and planet, right, it's actually quite easy to build a business or a country's economy that makes a profit rather than going profit first. Do the other things first and then join the dots.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it is, and I think every community has a role, and it's, and I think it's like Simon Anholt talks about nation branding, and really it's about the countries that with the biggest brands and the biggest, most positive reputations are the ones that do the most for the world. And so it's like, what can Cayman or Guernsey enable? Yeah.
And so cool. Well, that's one that we can leave. Maybe we should send this to the premiers and business leaders of our countries and others, and they can have a listen to what we're thinking, and perhaps they might pick up the phone and talk to you. My diary is also open for everybody to have copies with, and that happens. Although it's now as of Thursday morning, I am officially off the grid for a couple of weeks, but I look forward to switching the grid back on, because I know what I love and I know what fuels me, and it's connection to people and ideas. So I will be sitting here for as many hours a day as I feel up to, connecting to people around the world in, I don't know, about 2.5-3 weeks. So
I just want to say on behalf of probably everyone that's listening, that wish you well with.
Thank you, my friend.
Going to arrive, because that's not always easy.
Yeah. As a very stoic person that's very close to me says the lock screen on their phone, it is what it is.
Yeah, changing it right now would be hard. But
so
I wish you the best.
Thank you, Mark, and it's been an absolute pleasure, and some real. Absolute diamonds in what you were talking about, and I was really glad to be there and look to connect the dots in my brain and hopefully for some of the audience.
Conversation. Thanks for
it. Well, I'm sure we'll have many more copies in the
future. I hope so. In Cayman or another fabulous island, that's something we should.
Oh, I might come down to Guernsey.
Rum and/or coffee, depends.
Oh, there is that, or you know, a mudslide perhaps, and we'll introduce you to the beauties of a mudslide.
I need to be tutored. It sounds good.
Soon come, as we say. So we'll do it at some point when we can arrange it. Anyway, all the best with your removing your 2 or 3 day hangover with a cup of coffee or more, as it feels from the COVID, is how you said that felt. And all the best with your convalescence and release from isolation. And I'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you very much.